recollections of his statements, all the later so-called histories of magic. For a time, the disappointment killed all creative power. With no laurel wreath to carve, my tools lay idle. The spirit of investigation languished. Then came the reaction. There was work to be done. Those who had wrought honestly deserved the credit that had been taken from them. In justice to the living as well as the dead, the history of the magic must be revised. His book, accepted for more than half a century as an authority on our craft, must stand forth for what it is, a clever romance, a well-written volume of fiction. That is why, today, I offer to the profession of magic, to the world of layman readers, to whom its history has always appealed, and to the literary savants who dip into it as a recreation, the results of my investigations. These, I believe, will show Robert Houdin's true place in the history of magic and give to his predecessors, in a profession which in each generation becomes more serious and more dignified, the credit they deserve. My investigations cover nearly 20 years of a busy professional career. Every hour which I could spare for my professional work was given over to study in libraries, to interviews with retired magicians and collectors, and to browsing in old bookstores and antique shops, where rare collections of programs, newspapers, and prints might be found. In order to conduct my research intelligently, I was compelled to pick up a smattering of the language of each country in which I played. The average collector or proprietor of an old bookshop is a canny, suspicious individual who must accept you as a friend before he will uncover his choicest treasures. As authorities, books on magic and kindred arts are practically worthless. The earliest books, like the magician stories written by Sir John Mandeville in 1356, read like prototypes of today's dime novels. They are thrilling tales of travelers who witnessed magical performances, but they are not authentic records of performers and their work. One of the oldest books in my collection is Natural and Unnatural Magic by Gansioni, dated 1489. It is the author's script, exquisite in its German chirography, artistic in its illuminated illustrations, but worthless as a historical record, though many of the writer's descriptions and explanations of old-time tricks are most interesting. Early in the 17th century appeared Hocus Pocus, the most widely copied book in the literature of magic. The second edition, dated 1635, I have in my library. I have never been able to find a copy of the first edition, or to ascertain the date at which it was published. A few years later, in 1658, came a very important contribution to the history of magic, in Natural Magic in 20 Books, by John Baptiste Porta, a Neapolitan. This has been translated into nearly every language. It was the first really important and exhaustive work on the subject, but unfortunately it gives the explanation of tricks, rather than an authentic record of their invention. In 1682, Simon Witrest of Amsterdam, Holland, wrote an admirable work whose title is Book of Natural Magic. This work was translated into German, ran through many an edition, and had an enormous sale in both Holland and Germany. In 1715, John White, an Englishman, published a work entitled Art's Treasury and Hocus Pocus, or A Rich Cabinet of Legerdemain Curiosities. This is fully as reliable a book as the earlier Hocus Pocus books, but it is not so generally known. Richard Neave, who was a popular English conjurer just before the time of Fawkes, published a book on somewhat similar lines in 1715. Germany contributed the next notable works on magic. First came Johann Samuel Haller's Magic or the Magical Power of Nature, printed in Berlin in 1784. One of his compatriots, Johann Christian Wiegleb, wrote 18 books on the natural magic, and while I shall always contend that the German books are the most complete, still they cannot be accepted as authorities, save that, in describing